Joining us for our debut episode of Tiny Talks is Mr. Carl David. Hi, Mr. David. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. It is wonderful to have you today. Our overarching topic for today is suicide prevention advocacy. And Mr. David is very, unfortunately, all too familiar with this topic, and we're going to get into that as the interview unfolds. But let me first tell you that Mr. David is the author of Baderfield, and that's B-A-D-E-R, if you want to search this out. Baderfield, How My Family Survived Suicide. His website is carledavid.com, and he'll obviously is going to tell you all about that. But Mr. David, before we get to some questions and delve into the suicide prevention advocacy part of your mission, if you would just kind of take us through your history, where you're from and what you've done.
Sure. I'm actually from Philadelphia, even though right now we're spending a lot of our time in South Florida, having had a new granddaughter 4 months ago. But I am a third generation fine art dealer. Our company's David Gallery in Philadelphia, and now we're also Provident Fine Art in Palm Beach. We specialize in American and European paintings, drawings, watercolors, and occasional sculpture from the 17th to the 21st century. So that's my main thoroughfare, if you will. It's been a passion all my life. I've been doing this for, 52 years. Mm-hmm. I hate to even fathom that number, but it's better than the alternative.
Right.
And I'm an avid supporter of law enforcement, having gone through several programs with the FBI and Homeland Security. And what else can I tell you? I love animals. I love people. And I'm a real patriotic American.
That's wonderful. We love that here on the line and in our area, which is South Central Pennsylvania. We certainly do. And I think that's the kind of the sentiment around the entire country, everything that you just hit on. Our overarching topic today, as I said at the onset, is suicide prevention advocacy. And Carl is no stranger to this. It's one of those things that, of course, we wish that it could be completely wiped from all of humanity. But Carl, if you would take us through your personal experience and your journey with suicide that happened to you from a young age.
I was 16 years old and I was in the auditorium of my high school, having just gotten there. And I had two older brothers, and my next older brother, who was our middle, didn't come home the night before, which was completely out of character. And there was a real feeling of malaise in the house. And I didn't want to go to school. And my parents said, no, you've got to go to school. So I went, and unbeknownst to me, I hear my name come out over the loudspeaker from the principal, who asked me to come up to the podium, which I did. And he said, you have to go home. There's been an emergency. Unfortunately, he didn't tell me what it was. And I had driven to school that day. I was 16. And I got home in about 6 minutes, and my older brother told me that Bruce was dead. And I almost, and this really kind of makes me emotional because it's hard to get through this, but
I understand.
I almost fell to the floor. My world went black in an instant. I had no idea. And that was the farthest concept from my mind, let alone my family's mind. I mean, we had never experienced anything like this. We were all close, happy, and this was completely out of character. So
now let me, if I may interrupt, I'm sorry, Carl.
Sure. So go ahead.
At the point that you're describing now, all you know when you say your world went black and probably, I'm sure, just very almost like an out of body experience. At this point, all you knew was that your brother had passed away. Correct.
Correct.
Okay.
I knew in a few minutes after that my brother told me that he had actually hanged himself in our gallery up on the fourth floor. And again, I had this was just like so surreal that it didn't sink in. Mm-hmm. My mother was upstairs, had just gotten out of the hospital after having major surgery. And my father was the one who actually found him. He went to the gallery, and I can't even imagine that nightmare, but it wreaked havoc with my father's life. He only lived 8 years after that.
Would you think that, and I know this is going to seem like an obvious question, and then that's kind of what we do on this program is, you know, we want to cover the obvious questions and then delve a little deeper. But I know one never gets over something like that, but you often hear people say that time heals all wounds. And some people will say that's true, and some people will say that's completely the opposite. What is your take on that? Because, and I say this because you just got so emotional, and why wouldn't you, of something that happened to you at 16 years old, and so much time has passed by, and it still obviously really wears on you.
It does, and I will tell you that you don't ever get over it. You only learn to live with it as best you can. This becomes a battle scar in your psyche. It's an imprint that just, it's there for, it's on your motherboard forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are triggers out there that when you hear about someone else taking their life, you hear about another family that's gone through it, or someone, fortunately, who survived it and didn't succeed. It brings it right back to the forefront as if it were 1965 all over again. So you don't get over it. In fact, it took our family several different modalities of therapy to just to cope with it because we were not prepared for this. It took me a psychoanalysis of 4 years, which basically saved my life. My parents had clergy and friends who helped them to get through it as best they could, and my brother as well, who had a different kind of therapy. But this is a scar that goes so deep that even, you know, as you mentioned, all these years later, it's there.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think we, by the way, we're talking with Carl David online, carledavid.com. He's the author of Baderfield, How My Family Survived Suicide. That's available through Nightingale Press. And today's topic is suicide prevention advocacy, and Mr. David just went into an in-depth story of his personal experience at 16 years old. Carl, this is, I suppose this is a good thing because there are, you know, most people, and I'm sure we'll get into some statistics later, but most people do not have a close personal experience with suicide. Probably most of us that are listening to this, our only exposure to that would be what we've seen on TV and in movies. But the one thing that seems to remain constant when you hear stories, and even if you did hear of a friend or something along those lines, the one thing that seems to be a common theme is the unknown of those that still remain. We didn't see any signs. This is completely inexplicable. From your personal experience, from your brother, was that one of the cases with your family's situation?
That was exactly the case. We had no forewarning, no signs, no telltale indications, absolutely nothing. I mean, this literally came out of left field, and it was, I guess, even more of a shock because of that. Had we seen something, we would have been able to intercede and hopefully have, you know, intervened and taken the reins so that this wouldn't have happened. And my brother, if he had known the kind of pain that would have been inflicted on the rest of us, would never have done that. But mm-hmm. I think that when someone is in that state of despair, the depth of their darkness and their whatever they can't see past and they can't see above it, that they don't think clearly, obviously, and they can't really circumvent or work through their feelings. I think they feel maybe something is hopeless, and we have no idea what it was. You know, we thought at the time maybe it was Vietnam War. His unit was about to go to Vietnam, and all the media were portraying all the kids coming back in body bags with no limbs and, mm-hmm. you know, the horrors and the fog of war. But that's only a guess. We don't know if that's what it was, and we've never had anything but that question mark, which lingers.
What would you say to people who are listening, because they may have a child who's in school, and obviously now with COVID and kids not being socialized like they typically are, I'm sure a lot of parents are just worried in general. As parents are just, you know, I have a daughter now and she's about to turn one, and I worry about her 24/7. So worrying as a parent is not a foreign concept. But they're all that you hear these things, and you're like, well, I don't want my child to succumb to that. What do you feel in your studies, in your research, and in the last over 50 years, what is it that you would say to parents who are saying to you, well, Mr. David, what should I look for?
I think that there has to be an open communication, and kids have to know that the parents will be there for them without judgment. no matter what. I mean, and you know, if they see them going down a dark path or doing drugs or hanging out with the wrong crowd, they've got to sit down and talk to them and say, listen, this is a dangerous path you're going down. We understand, you know, let's talk about this. And maybe get them some help if they need it, if they look like they're going astray and they feel hopeless. But I think communication is critical. This is something that I've been doing ever since the book came out at the end of 08. And, you know, doing television, journal, and radio interviews to raise awareness to the scourge of suicide, which when I was going through this when I was 16, people looked the other way. They didn't talk about it. This was like this dirty secret. Hey, he's the kid whose brother killed himself. You know, that's what I would feel when I was back in high school and I was able to go back to school. I felt like I was the one who was being judged. And no one should ever judge anybody, one, for taking their life, or two, for talking about it, or three, for even thinking about it, because that's an immediate button that will push someone over the edge. And they don't deserve that. I mean, it's not something that they should be criticized for. It's something that should be spoken about, that should be open communication. I think it's something that should be taught in schools, suicide awareness, because right. A lot of these kids hold stuff in.
Well, what would you say to, say, a family who, for instance, your family, and you've told us enough that we could draw this conclusion, that there if there were warning signs, you didn't see them. If there were anything, any triggers, you didn't know about them. So what would you say to parents or siblings of someone or even close friends who are dealing with this, but yet, and I'm sure this is the case, so correct me if I'm wrong first before we move on, those who are left behind often, I'm sure, feel immense guilt. Is that correct?
That is correct. Absolutely. So then
what would you say, because I think that you could agree that as long as signs were not ignored, you could say that guilt may not be the emotion that maybe misplaced, correct?
That is correct. I think it's a survivor's guilt, you know, and you feel like I should have seen something that I didn't see. I mean, look, we're all human, so there's just so much that we can see and be perceptive about, which is important, but you can't take responsibility for someone else's life. You know, for instance, if someone is going to start giving things away and dropping out of their social interests and becoming reclusive and talking about killing themselves, yeah, then you got to step in, because then those are overt signs that really need attention. And that's not something you can ignore. The worst you can do is make someone feel self-conscious or embarrassed when they say, I really didn't mean it. I was just saying it because I was angry or whatever. Well, yeah, you don't know. So it's better to say something and do something if you see something than to just ignore it. And then you have to live with the guilt. But normally guilt is not something that you have to own, because it's not appropriate. You know, these are things that people do that you can't always control. I see it in law enforcement when cops will take their own life, and I feel horrible about that. Mm-hmm. And that may be the fault of some of the agencies that just don't have the wherewithal or the ability to sit down and have, you know, group therapy, even, and have guys talk about what the fog of war is, the PTSD that they're suffering, and open up. You know, feelings are not just for women, they're for everybody.
Right.
And, you know, when we were growing up, it was like, oh, men don't feel their feelings, not supposed to show them. Well, that's garbage. I mean, you know, that causes a lot of problems.
We're talking with Carl David, online, carledavid.com, author of Bader Field, How My Family Survived Suicide. And Carl, I think we should end with this question. So we've talked about some of the signs to look for and being willing to talk and having open dialogue and knowing that your children or whomever it is that you think may be experiencing thoughts of suicide, that they feel that they have an audience with you and a shoulder to cry on and merely somebody to listen. It's so, so very important. Just in general life, even if you don't think suicide is on the table, just to be able to listen to someone can help more than I think any of us would be able to comprehend. But Carl, how did you, I know we said before, you don't get over it, you cope, you deal. But what would you say to people who are currently dealing with this, who are having a difficult time processing what has happened? It's fresh, it's raw, and even if it's a long way, even if it's, say, 5-10 years ago, it is still very there, as it is apparent with your situation. What are some things that helped you to overcome or at the very least survive with these feelings?
Professional help. I mean, suicide is the kind of death that is just so powerful and so inconceivable, if you will. It is not natural. And this is something that, you know, if a family's going through this or have lost a loved one or a friend or someone important to them in their lives, they should really talk to someone. You know, and I've told people who have had this experience because I know a lot of, I'm not the only one. I mean, there's unfortunately close to 50,000 people a year just here in America that take their life. Mm-hmm. And it's probably more now with the lockdowns and everything else, with kids being so isolated. But talking to someone in clergy, talking to a bartender, talking to another family member or friends, anything, just to communicate and get it out. There are helplines today. There's online therapy. There's all kinds of places you can call and say, hey, look, I just lost someone to suicide. Who can I talk to? You know, or if someone's feeling that they're desolate and they're going to commit suicide, there are suicide helplines where they can call and be listened to without judgment. And not, this sounds inconceivable, but sometimes after talking to someone down for 10 minutes, they've changed their mind. They realize that there is hope, they're not alone, and they're loved.
Right. Mr. David, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to talk to us on the line today. It's been eye-opening. It's something that I think we might think we know about it, but in reality, we really have no idea until you're there. And you certainly, the point of you being here is to keep as many people from being there as possible on both ends, because help is there. You don't have to have a degree to quote unquote talk someone off a ledge. And you've been great here with us, Mr. David. I would like for you to take this opportunity, if you would, to let everyone know, if you'd like for them to reach out to you, how they would do that.
Sure. The best way is through my email, because my website's down at the moment. We're rebuilding it. It's Carl E. David. It's CarlEDavid, one word, at gmail.com. I have made this a mission in my life to take the darkest days of my life and do something to benefit others with them. And I may never know, but I've been doing this for so long. It's just something I feel I have to do, or I've wasted an opportunity to maybe save a life. I feel like Schindler. Maybe I could have saved one more. So this is a real passion for me. And hopefully I save someone from taking their life, making them choose to live rather than die, or I help a family who's gone through it and having trouble dealing with it, because it is just not easy.
Well, Mr. David, I pray that you have many more years of helping people. And like you said, you may never know, but I'm confident in saying that you've helped people, I'm sure, and hopefully you'll help many, many more. Again, his website, carledavid.com. That's under construction right now, and I'm sure that'll be up and running as soon as possibly can. The book is called Bader Field, How My Family Survived Suicide, available through Nightingale Press, many outlets where you can get that. So just do a Google search and you should be able to find that. Mr. David, thank you so much for joining us today on Tiny Talks.
Thank you, Dan. My pleasure. Appreciate being able to be on with you.